Do you know how there's certain television shows and movies from the 70s, and we've always had this discussion like, oh, these could never be made today. There's also a lot of songs from the Anything Goes decade that would raise a few eyebrows today, and some that even did back then. So on this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we're going to tell you all about the most controversial songs of the 1970s. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Everybody, moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the circus. My name is Ludini. I am your ringmaster.
Masker?
We're done with masks.
Take the mask off.
It seeped into my brain.
Come on, man.
I'm your ring master.
You're brainwashed.
Yes. I need to take my brain out. After this podcast, Kevin's going to take my brain out. Lily's going to wash it with some cool water and put it back in, and cool I'll be right water. As rain. Right as rain. I'm the ringmaster here at the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. You can get more information at LudiniRockandRollCircus.com. Lou Lombardi Music. If you like some Ludini swag, go to LouLombardiMusic.com/R&R Circus. There's all kind of cool things right now. We have a new giveaway coming out that some of you are going to be finding out about very shortly. We're giving away a Led Zeppelin box set. So keep your eyes and ears open, guys, because it's going to be all kind of yums. We're going to play. It is finally released. I've been teasing this for a long time. My new song, Peace in the Valley, we're going to play that at the end. So stick around to the end if you guys want to check that out. And you can download an advanced copy of it. Right now it is not anywhere. It is not on iTunes or Spotify or any of those places yet. I'm giving folks out there that are, been following me for a while, frenemies, the chance to just go ahead and get that for themselves right away. LouLombardiMusic.com. You can get all the information there. Lots of great stuff. Soon, when you get to LudiniRockandRollCircus.com, we have bios and everything. And Lily finally sent me her bio, so that's going to go up. And Keith has a bio, so it's really exciting. So check that all out, all over the internet. LudiniRockandRollCircus.com, LouLombardiMusic.com. Shout out to Wolf's Customs, wolfscustoms.online. Again, guys, I tell you all the time, no sense in going out there and playing these gigs with the same boring-looking guitars, speaker cabinets, drum heads, whatever it is you play, bass guitar, tambourine, anything, Wolf's Customs will put a custom finish on whatever musical instrument you have so that you can like really stand out. And it goes a long way to putting on a show. Also, Kevin can attest to this. When you're playing a guitar that kind of looks really kind of cool and everything, don't you feel kind of cooler and you feel like you're more into it? Yes. And it's super fun. So yes. It adds to the whole vibe of it. So go to wolfscustoms.online and tell them Ludini sent you. RockRageRadio.com real quick. Download the app. You can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7. Speaking of Rock Rage Radio, in the house today, we have Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio. What's up, Lily?
What's up? I had a fun-filled weekend of things. So, Wrecking Crew Friday, my own show, Lily Six's Live Saturday, was Saturday. I went to a Reptile show on Sunday, and I went to see the Shady Mugs yesterday. So, a whole weekend.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like
peachy fun.
That sounds like fun. You went to the Reptile Expo over here?
It was actually in Monroeville, the big one.
Okay. Did you know they have the one over here sometimes?
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know the song Snake Farm?
No.
Ray Wiley Howard. I'll play it for you guys after the podcast.
Oh, boy.
If you guys don't know the song, look it up. It's a really good Snake Farm.
Sounds
good
dirty.
Good jam. No. Well, it's a kind of a double entendre. It's kind of a double entendre.
I want to think it's dirty.
Snake Farm.
So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else we really need to hit real quick. Now, let's get into it. This is a super fun topic. There was a time before where people didn't really like constantly get offended. Remember that?
I do remember.
The good old days.
It was the 1970s and the early 1980s. It just kind of was. Those were a kind of period in pop culture, American culture, whatever, where it was sort of like anything goes, yeah, you do you, I'll do me, we're all good. And it was the era of movies like Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
Television shows like All in the Family and The Jeffersons, yes, and Different Strokes, things like that, where we just kind of said it all. We just put it out there and we could decide.
And sense of humor was a thing.
Sense of people had a sense of humor. And rock and rollers, pop singers, even country singers were sort of pushing some boundaries. This was the post-60s sexual revolution thing. And so we have songs from like every genre. Mm-hmm. Today we're going to talk about. So, and I encourage you guys that after we tell the stories, you know, maybe we should create a playlist on YouTube. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create a controversial 70 songs playlist on YouTube, and I will start posting the links on my social media, and you guys can check it out. And if you have some you'd like us to add, you can let us know. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
And speaking of social media, real quick, I forgot to mention, go to iTunes, rate, review, give us a good rating, good review, and subscribe, please. That helps us a lot. But so yeah, I think that would be super fun to do. We could all participate in it. You know what? And I almost forgot. We do have Pittsburgh Kevin.
Hey, Yins guys.
Sorry about that. Sorry. I was like getting ahead of myself. So I kept on saying there's something else, and nobody in the room said, hey, you didn't introduce Pittsburgh Kevin. Come on. Come on, guys. We got to step up.
You know.
Sorry. Lily thinks she can just sit here and look hot, and that's enough.
I mean.
Hey, now. Oh, my.
Now it's time.
Okay.
Actually, that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. But so we're going to be talking about these, and I have some, and Kevin has... Kevin, you have some?
A couple.
Okay. Lily has some. So we're going to just go around the room like we normally do and throw these out and comment and see where it takes us. So we are going to start with Lily V6.
Yes.
I just want to preface this with I was not born in the 70s, but that good old time fun happened throughout the 90s as well before we all got offended by everything. Anyway, Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed, 1972. It was produced by David Bowie and Mick Ronson, released as a double A-side with Perfect Day. The song received wide radio coverage and became Reed's biggest single, despite its touching on taboo topics such as transgender people, drugs, male prostitution, and oral sex. In the United States, RCA also released a cleaned-up version of the single without the reference to the oral sex or colored girls. But most radio stations continued to play the unedited version. The lyrics describing the series of individuals and their journeys to New York City refer to several of the regular superstars at Andy Warhol's New York studio, which I love because Andy Warhol's my favorite artist, The Factory, namely Holly Woodlawn, Candy Darling, Joe D'Alessandro, Jackie Curtis, and Joe Campbell, referred to in the song by his nickname Sugar Plum Fairy. Candy Darling,
I thought the song was about Pittsburgh Kevin.
Well, now we all know. We told on him. Candy Darling was also the subject of Reed's earlier song, The Velvet Underground, Candy Says. Each verse refers to one of the superstars at Andy Warhol's New York studio, The Factory. Holly is based on Holly Woodlawn, the transgender actress who lived in Miami Beach, Florida, as a child. In 62, after being bullied by homophobes, the 15-year-old ran away from home. And as we learn in the lyrics, she learned how to pluck her eyebrows while hitchhiking to New York. Candy is based on Candy Darling, a transgender actress and the subject of an earlier song by Lou Reed. Candy says she grew up on Long Island and was a regular at the Back Room at Max's Kansas City, which is where Aerosmith had their very first gig.
The Back Room.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Little Joe was the nickname of Joe D'Alessandro, an actor who starred in Flesh, a 1968 film about a teenage hustler. It said in 2014 that he had not yet met Reed when the song was written, and the lyrics were based on the film character, not himself personally. Sugar Plum Fairy has been described as a reference to actor Joe Campbell, who played a character by that name in Warhol's 1965 film My Hustler. The term was a euphemism for a drug dealer. Sugar Plum Fairy may have been a composite of a number of drug dealers in the Warhol superstar circle. And Jackie is based on Jackie Curtis, another Warhol actress. Speeding and crashing are drug references. Curtis at one time hoped to play the role of James Dean in a movie. Dean was killed in a car crash. So these are all things at the time, well, not even at the time, now would probably be like, you can't talk about that. Can't say anything bad.
You can't say that, as the Beatles would tell you.
But I like how he met these actual people and then wrote a song about them. Because Warhol was a freaky guy and he had freaky people.
I had heard, excuse me, that these were real characters.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard that before. This was a song, like, It's a like a classic, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's played on the oldie station and stuff like that. And I never forget the first time I heard it. Like, and she never lost her even when she was given it. Like, yeah. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
And then that made me want to go back and listen to the rest of the thing. Now today, the Color Girls go doot to doot. Now today, that is like, but yeah. At the time. That is how people of African descent, and actually it was a kind of catchphrase for like all kind of like so-called minorities,
right?
Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. it was the vernacular,
mm-hmm. Right?
It was, you know, I know people are listening right now going, ah!
You said colored.
it was the vernacular. That's what people said
at the time. That was very common.
I'm going to tell you guys, like, it's going to change around again. All the stuff that, like, we wring our hands over, run around to, at some point will become completely normal, and other stuff will be taboo. There's actually been great books written about stuff like that, so you can go ahead and check out. So, just calm down.
Calm down.
It's a great song.
It is one of my favorite to dance to.
Who does a sax solo on that?
I have no idea. I did not check that.
Maybe Pittsburgh Kevin could look that up for us.
Why? Well, Lily's got the phone right in her hand right now as we speak. You know why?
I wanted to play the saxophone on it.
She's really good.
This is a song that is a huge hit, and it has all this crazy stuff. And I think it was just, I think I read an interview with Lou Reed where it's just like, I don't know, I just wanted to introduce people to characters mm-hmm. that they may never have met before.
Ronnie Ross.
Mm. And that he did. And it's a really captivating song. Oh, yeah. Like, it captivates your imagination.
Takes you on a journey. Yeah. You're learning about these people. It's like,
yeah, I mean, you just kind of go off, and you kind of, and I think everybody fills in the gaps on these characters. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? In their own minds. It's a brilliant song. It's absolutely a brilliant song. I know you guys are fans of like heavy metal and stuff like that. Probably not something you. Speaking of that, though, do you know that Lou Reed did an album with Metallica as his band?
I did not do yes. that, actually.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's one of the worst records in the history of records. But I respect them for doing it. I'm going to switch gears a little wee bit. So this is about as far away. What year was Walking the Wild Side released?
72.
Okay, this is another song that was released in 1972.
I lied. Hold on.
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah, it's 72. I was right.
Okay, that's what I thought. So this is another song that was released in 1972 from a completely different artist and a completely different genre.
This is great, though.
But,
oh, here we go. Yeah.
But by the time Loretta Lynn recorded The Pill in 1972, the birth control pill had been on the U.S. market for over a decade, but the conservative country music scene still wasn't ready for a song mm-hmm. celebrating the use of contraception. Many country stations pulled the song from their playlists and installed it at number 5. But controversy breeds curiosity, and curiosity boosts record sales.
Oh, yeah.
So the song became Lynn's highest charting single on the pop chart. She broke the pop charts with this, not just country. In an interview, she explained, "I didn't understand that because everybody was talking about the pill. I didn't have the money to take it when they put it out, but I couldn't understand why they're raising such a fuss over taking the pill." although it was written by a team of writers, Lynn could certainly relate to the narrator who is sick of having babies left and right and is making up for all those years since I got on the pill. By the time she was 19, Lynn had 3 children and would give birth to 3 more, including a set of twins, just as the pill was gaining traction in 64. She told People magazine, "If I had the pill back when I was having babies, I'd have taken them. taken it like popcorn. The pill is good for people. I wouldn't trade my kids for anyone, but I wouldn't necessarily have had 6. Mm. And I sure would have spaced them better."
I love her.
She's freaking amazing. I have another girl power song on my list as well later on. You might have it on your list too. Doctors were grateful to Lynn as the song introduced the availability of the pill to women living in rural areas.
There you go.
I think this is so cool. Unbeknownst to Lynn at the time, she was almost banned from singing this at the Grand Ole Opry. She recalled in an interview with Playgirl magazine, It just keeps going. You know, I sung it three times at the Grand Ole Opry one night, and I found out a week later that the Grand Ole Opry had a three-hour meeting, and they weren't going to let me sing it. If they hadn't let me sing the song, I'd have told them to shove the Grand Ole Opry.
And she would have.
Lynn performed this on Dolly Parton's variety show, Dolly, in 88,
wow.
and on Roseanne Barr's talk show, The Roseanne Show, in 1998. This is the first popular English language song about birth control.
That's fantastic.
Ain't that something?
And it's Loretta Lynn. Like, what a, you know, what a trendsetter. God bless you, Loretta. Fantastic. Hey. Fantastic. She did a great record. I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, produced by Jack White.
I remember when that came out.
If you've not heard it, you should definitely go check out it. It is very, very good. But you go, Loretta Lynn.
I had a girl.
Love you. And Pittsburgh Kevin, you want to chime in with something? Or?
Yeah, sure. We're going to go to the year of 1977. Your friends and mine, the Sex Pistols, and their song, God Save the Queen. As punk fans know, the Sex Pistols were all about controversy. Of course, there is plenty of reason to believe it was all an act, since Johnny Rotten has managed to do quite well in the mainstream after the fact. Excuse me. But this song suggested that Queen Elizabeth II monarchy was actually a fascist regime. It invented problems, and because of this, the BBC refused to play it. However, the song reached number five. It did reach number five in the UK, even though it wasn't being played. So not all controversy has to deal with sex and drugs.
And in the last election, John Lydon was a Trump supporter.
Was he?
It just goes to show you what a kind of like guy he's like. You know, he's like he's very like kind of like, you know, he's taking it all in. Good pick. Good pick. I remember when the Sex Pistols were like a kind of they were a human interest piece on like 60 Minutes,
yes,
or 2020
yeah.
or something like that. Mm-hmm. They just like once on one of those news shows, and I just remember watching it and thinking they were so awesome. But I had to pretend like I was like
appalled.
Really disgusted because
yes.
my parents were there
terrible.
And they were like, oh my god. And then I was kind of pissed off because like so my parents was, and so they think that made them hate rock music even more.
Of course.
And it was a whole thing. But I love, but the Sex Pistols. I'm glad that they did that. That needed to happen. You needed those, you know.
Let's declare civil war.
Yeah. You need those people that are just kind of like totally give their finger to the establishment. It doesn't really matter. It isn't the idea that it's conservative or liberal or left or right. It's whoever's in power and screw you.
That's it.
You know, we don't care. We don't know. We don't even know what the politics are. Hell with you. So that is that's a good one, Kevin.
Thank you.
That's a good one. Please go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com or LuLombardiMusic.com. If you want my new song, go to LuLombardiMusic.com. So we'll go back to Lily.
I've got My Sharona by The Knack.
My Sharona.
1979, debut single. Released in 79, like I just said. It reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and was number one. I already said that. Wow. And it remained there for 6 weeks. The Knack lead singer, Don Figer, wrote the lyrics to the song, which is about a girl he fancied. Doug was in a long-term relationship when he walked into a clothing store where a high school student named Sharona, who had a boyfriend, was working. The age difference was about 8 years old and the relationship,
she's only 8 years old.
And the relationship status, didn't deter him, who was, he was immediately love struck by this girl, with his girlfriend looking on. He invited Sharona to a show. Not long after, he broke up with his girlfriend and professed his love for Sharona, creating a weird dynamic where he broke up or where he would come on to her, even though she had a boyfriend who often attended the shows with her. It got pretty heavy when he started writing songs about her. They weren't together when he composed My Sharona, and about a year later, or a year after they first met, Sharona gave in and they started dating. She joined the band on tour and watched as the song he wrote about her elevated them to stardom. The couple were together for about 4 years. They were even engaged at one point, before the rock and roll lifestyle, and his alcoholism became too much for her, and they called it off. In the aftermath, Sharona answered questions about the breakup by saying that she needed to become her own Sharona, not someone else's. This wasn't the only song on the album that was about Sharona and his feelings for her. The songs That's What Little Girls Do and She's So Selfish were also inspired by her. So that's a little sick.
Oh, my.
I think she was 17, right?
Again, it was a different era.
Yeah, legit.
And people looked at things differently. And I don't want to get any hate. Screw you. Right. That's the fucking facts. If I lived through it. So people just kind of like, man, whatever. It was not some kind of crazy thing. Weird Al Yankovic did a parody called My Bologna.
Yes, I remember that song.
It was very a song well. That kickstarted his career as a song parody guy. Al was, before he was weird, recorded a few song parodies as a high school student, including a takeoff on You Don't Bring Me Flowers called You Don't Take Your Showers.
Oh, man.
He sent some to the popular syndicated radio host, of course, who?
Dr. Demento,
who wrote back informing Al that he had potential. This potential was realized when Yankovic was a 19-year-old student at Cal Poly Pismo Beach, where he was studying architecture. Mm. He was a DJ on the school radio station where My Sharona was the most requested song. Many of Al's parodies had to do with food, so he wrote My Bologna. Recorded it in the bathroom across the hall from the station. He sent it to Dr. Demento, who played it on his show to wide acclaim, making number one on his Funny Five countdown for 2 weeks.
There you go.
When the Knack played a show at the college, Al went backstage, introduced himself as the man behind My Bologna. As Al tells it, Doug Feger said he loved the song and introduced him to the vice president of the Knack's label, Capitol Records, who was standing nearby. Capitol execs signed Al. This is like a freaking Cinderella story,
yeah. Right?
Capitol execs signed Al to a deal to release the single, which they did. But with minimal effort, instead of re-recording the song, they just issued Al's bathroom version in mono and gave it a little production. That was the end of Al's association with Capitol, but had a success on other labels with I Love Rocky Road, Ricky, and the hit Pay Dirt was his Michael Jackson parody, Eat It.
Eat It.
My Bologna wasn't the only parody of this Knack song. Others included Ayatollah by the radio personality Steve Dahl and Babylonia by the parody band Apologetics. Quentin Tarantino wanted to use it in Pulp Fiction during the scene where Bruce Willis and Ving Rhames are being set upon by Zed and his brother. That would have been freaking awesome.
Yeah, it would have.
Feger ended up nixing the request, and the song appeared in a 1994 movie, Reality Bites, instead.
I remember that.
He should have been in Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Stacey Scher, a producer who was working on both films, recalled Feger chose the gas station sing-along over the basement dungeon with the Gimp. He loved the notion of the sweet moment commemorating the person he always loved very much. So, in other words, he got a little sentimental. He couldn't stand, even at that point in his life, him and Sharona had been broken up for years, and he couldn't stand the fact he must have still had feelings for her. Because, like, he didn't want it to be the song that he, about this woman he loved, now become associated with.
With, yeah.
Yeah, that.
She was with him in his last days, though.
Anyhow, it's. That is the story, and a little bonus there about Weird Al Yankovic. That's great. Like this, like there's like two great stories about this. You know what I mean? That's not what a great song it is.
Two great stories in one.
It's like
oh god,
the two great tastes to taste great together.
Isn't it?
It's like, look, I just want bread. I just want normal size.
I don't want this to hinder your performance.
It's not going to hinder your performance. All right. anybody watching? I see. It looks like some people are watching. I always get to the shout outs, and you have to help me with. You have to help me.
It's a shout out.
So, like I said, we have Tracy Sampson watching, Bill Damiano, gosh, Beth Petronell, Patrick Shalafu, and I'm sorry if I totally botched that. The most controversial album I've ever heard was by David Allan Coe. Not sure what year it was released. There's probably a lot of those because David Allan Coe is awesome.
All right. Good picks. Kevin, you got another one you want to
talk about? Sure. Let's go to 1978. a little band out of England called Queen.
Oh, Queen.
Fat Bottom Girls.
But not God Save the
Queen. No. See, there's a lot of Queen with
you
me.
You did
there's
sort of a thing there.
A lot of Queen going on with me tonight. Anyway.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. Fat Bottom Girls. If you listen to the lyrics.
They make the rockin' world go round.
They do that. But if you look at the lyrics, though, I was just a skinny lad, never knew no good from bad, but I knew life before I left my nursery. Left alone with Big Fat Fanny, she was such a naughty nanny.
Big woman?
She was a big,
made a bad boy of me. So this is, of course, insinuating that the poor lad was taken advantage of by his naughty nanny. But it's funny, like songs like this, like you just the lyrics just become part of the song. You don't give any really deep thought to what, of course, I always thought about. I'm like, ooh, I wish I had a naughty nanny.
Of course.
Right
you
then?
Do.
Of course I did. I still wish that. But,
to change your diaper.
Yep. So there you go. Not banned, though, because it was a hit.
Yeah, legit.
It wasn't banned. But it's one of the, it's an example of something that, like, if it came out today,
it'd be questioned.
People would be like, whoa, what?
It would be body shaming, too.
Yeah, that's yes. The other, I thought that's the other thing you were talking about.
Yeah, that was
about,
it. And that could, you could go that way, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's that.
You know, so that is that goes, that definitely goes in that category. Probably not, again, this was not, it just went, and people just sang along with it. And guys were like, yeah, my nanny taught me how to, you know, do the nasty. And it wasn't ever a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why, and I'm not here. And if you were a victim of child abuse or something like that, I feel very bad for you. That sucks. It's terrible. It's a song.
That's all.
Turn this podcast off and go listen to something by some, like, feminist chick who will straighten you out. So I want to talk about one, keeping in the same vein as that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Keeping in the vein of something that, like, people would be like, what is this song really about? This is a song... Actually, I think all these songs, I think we roller skated to, by the way.
yeah.
But this was a song I roller skated to, and I even did the hand sign, YMCA, mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
By the American disco group. This was released in 78. The Village People, or The Village People, as the only single from the third studio album, Cruisin'. Mm-hmm. Just that movie with Al Pacino.
Never saw it.
Yes, it's about the gay nightclub scene, underground nightclub scene in New York. The song was written by Jacques Morales, also the record's producer and singer Victor Willis. A medley with Hot Cop reached number 2 on Billboard's Dance Music Club Play Singles chart, while the song reached number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100s in early 79, placing behind, this was hot at the time. La Freak.
Mm-hmm.
That was huge.
Mm-hmm. And Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart, which is a song I just listened to on Spotify the other day. Outside the U.S., MCA reached number 1 in the U.K. around the same time, becoming the group's biggest hit. It is one of fewer than 40 singles to have sold 10 million or more physical copies worldwide. The song remains popular and is played at many sporting events in the U.S. and Europe. Joining on the dance in which arm movements are used, that's what I was talking about,
yes.
Where they spell out YMCA, appeared as a space shuttle wake-up call, day 11 of STS-106. In 2009, YMCA set a Guinness World Record when over 44,000 people danced to Village People's live performance of the song at the 08 Sun Bowl game in El Paso, Texas. YMCA is number 7 on VH1's list of Hot 100 Greatest Dance Songs. Let me see. Was included in the Grammy Hall of Fame, selected by the Library of Congress for Preservation of National Recording Registry. Do you realize that?
Wow.
For being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. In its official press release, the library noted that back in its heyday, YMCA was a hit around the world, going to number 1 mm-hmm. on the charts in over 15 countries. It was ongoing popularity is evidence that despite the naysayers, disco has never truly died. So what I want to do, YMCA song lyrics. I want to see if maybe this song speaks to everyone out there the way it speaks to me. Young man.
Okay.
There's no need to feel down. I said, young man, pick yourself off the ground. I said, young man, because you're in a new town. There's no need to be unhappy. Young man, there's a place you can go. I said, young man, when you're short on your dough, you can stay there. And I'm sure you will find many ways to have a good time.
Mm.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Sure it is.
They have everything for you men to enjoy. Oh. You can hang out with all the boys.
I'll bet.
What do you think the song's about?
I think it's about fellowship with other...
Camaraderie.
Camaraderie. Wow.
Sorry, I went there.
You yell at us.
I have never.
Young lady.
Yeah, you can do whatever you feel at the YMCA.
I like the no man line.
No man does it all does it all by himself.
No.
He needs
a hand.
They need a hand.
Or two.
Oh. Yikes.
This is a song about somebody trying to kind of bring somebody into, as they say, the lifestyle.
Mm.
That's what the song is really about. Maybe somebody who's maybe very young.
Ooh.
Very young.
35.
This is a controversial song.
It is.
It is. I'm not making
it
up.
But everybody took it for a dance song.
Everybody took it as a dance song. We had a good time to it, blah, 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 blah. But really listen to the words. And probably at the time, this is a good example of, it's a time where people just had fun, whatever. Now, in light of all kinds of things that have happened and history and whatever, you look at it, there may be some not so nice aspects to what's going on here.
Right.
Right? You understand what I'm saying?
It's not as party time.
Exactly. So you have to kind of I'm just putting it out there. But I think this is definitely one of those songs that, like, I don't know. What are you trying to say here? You know? I mean, gay is, like, out there. Everybody's gay. Like, no. It's, like, not a big... That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the sort of implication...
There's a darker side to it.
Yeah, that there's something kind of darker going on that would make the gay community kind of embarrassed. Let's put it that way. Something that may not be the anthem that you really think that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, tricky. It's, you
know
what I'm saying? Like, yes. It's one of the... Mayhap it is, mayhap it ain't. So, all right, let's get off of that. I need to get out of this.
Yes.
Need to get out of that
realm.
I need
Lily to talk about something. Talk about something for a second. Lily, talk about something. Give me something good.
I'll talk about another.
Something good.
No, it's boy, not that song.
Lily.
But it's another Brick in the Wall Part 2
from
1979.
Mm-hmm. Get the hell out of here.
Oh, boy.
Another Brick in a Wall is a three-part composition of Pink Floyd's 1979 rock opera The Wall, written by bassist Roger Waters. All right. Part 2 is a protest song against rigid and abusive schooling featuring a children's choir. At the suggestion of producer Bob Ezrin, Pink Floyd added elements of disco. Part 2 was released as a single, Pink Floyd's first in the UK since Point Me at the Sky. It sold over 4 million copies worldwide. Nominated for a Grammy, was number 384 on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Roger Waters wrote the song about his views on formal education, which were framed during his time at the Cambridgeshire School for Boys. He hated his grammar school teachers and felt they were more interested in keeping the kids quiet than teaching them. The Wall refers to the emotional barrier Waters built around himself because he wasn't in touch with reality. The bricks in the wall were the events in his life which propelled him to build this proverbial wall around him, and his school teacher was another brick in the wall. The song is meant to be a rebellion against government, against people who have power over you who are wrong. Then it is absolutely demanded that you rebel against that. It did not sit well with teachers that kids were singing an anti-school song. The lyrics are, when we grew up and went to school, there were certain teachers who would hurt the children any way they could.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
The happiest days
still
of our
still going on.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't changed, Roger.
The happiest days of our lives explains that the teachers must have it rough in their own homes, getting thrashed and by their fat and psychopathic wives, which is why they take out their frustration on the students. The line "We don't need no education" is a grammatically incorrect line.
Intentionally,
it has a double negative and really means we need education. This could be a commentary on the quality of the schools. This was on the list of songs for Chartiers Houston High School in class of 2000 to vote for, and it won. However, Principal Dr. Durda, yes, I named you, told us that we were never going to have that be our song because it poo-poos on the education system, and we had to choose another song. So it really is just like crapping on the education system, which is kind of a
thing. Well, let me just add to what you're saying. We just went through a pandemic. I'm making air quotes here. And we discovered that there were all kind of jobs that people were driving to. Okay. All right. Probably in SUVs, which are bad for the environment. Probably going to, it's costing the company like thousands, if not millions of dollars in office space. All kind of waste for breaks and stuff like that. When these people could have been just working from home. Right, we discovered all kinds. There's many people that are never going to go back to the office because we don't need to.
You don't need to.
And right. It took a pandemic, so-called pandemic, plandemic, as the Hawk would say, for us to realize this. Why do you think we all feel like we have to go to a building and sit in a cubicle and sit at a desk? Why?
I need to.
That's what school is, because that's what school yes. School is just there to get you to kind of conform to the thing. We're so blinded by the school, by our schooling, by our school system, we didn't even realize, I don't need to go to that job. I can do that right here. Like,
yes.
I don't, and it's like if you, like, if you don't go, like, the boss can't, like, watch you. Like, what are you doing? You know? And there's so many ways, like, around that, like, you can, like, they can do that virtually and stuff like that. You log in. When you're logged in, we can see you're logged in. You can do your thing when you log in. You know what I mean? Boom, boom, boom. Tons of money is saved and everything like that. But because – so I think that the – I thought that Pink Floyd was right on, man, with this. I think this is a kind of a subject that really needs to be – deeply looked at, and it's so great that what year was it for you?
Oh, 2000.
2000.
And we were still not allowed
and
to have it.
And the song came out in 70 what?
79. Yeah.
So all these years later, people are still thinking about that song. It's an amazing song, and it's got a great message, and I just hope that, like, people out there really pay attention to what that song is trying to say, because it's making a dynamite point. So I'm done preaching. I apologize. So we're having a really good time here tonight. Go to lulombardimusic.com. You can get my new song. We're going to play here at the end of the show.
Ooh, nice.
I'm going to pick one, and I don't know. I apologize, Lily. I thought you might have this on your list. Mayhap you do, mayhap you don't. Contrary to what many listeners believed... this is not, and I mean not, a song about menstruation.
Oh, what? My God, you had to say it so weird. Moonblood.
It does not, Moonblood. And it does not advocate domestic violence. Alice Cooper is singing about how women bleed from the heart, mind, and soul. Several feminist groups protested the song, but it's actually a sympathetic look at domestic abuse. It's a rare song where Cooper doesn't try to shock, but takes the side of the victim. Dick Wagner, who co-wrote the song with Cooper, told us, "It's really a song about domestic violence. It was misunderstood when it first came out. It was supposedly about a woman's period, but it wasn't. It was about a woman's subservient position in society to men. I'm a firm believer that women are the superior sex." Whoa, okay, Dick, good for you. Ironically, your name is Dick.
I love it.
Maybe your name should be Vagina.
What? What?
"Only Women Bleed" was a liberating kind of song. Alice Cooper and his guitarist Dick Wagner also wrote the ballads "You and Me" and "I Never Cry." They wrote those together. Alice called this a style heavy metal housewife rock.
There you go.
I love it.
And then that whole thing you just said is ruined.
It's gone.
And explained in an interview with Cream. Remember Cream Magazine?
Yeah, Cream Magazine. Wow.
"I did those songs totally out of spite. I kept reading so many interviews and articles that said I was never considered musical. Best rock show they ever saw, but musically lacking. They kept saying I was a performer, but didn't write anything. So I said, oh, yeah? Watch Wait, do you hear this? The ballad was a centerpiece of Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare tour and his biggest hit from the album. Cooper performed the song with a single dancer, and it remained part of his stage show for many of his concerts in the ensuing years. Alice told Mojo, "I didn't realize it would end up as a woman's anthem. I just needed a ballad for Welcome to My Nightmare."
I think I've seen that at every one of his shows.
Dick Wagner wrote that would become the music for the song in 68 when he was with a band called The Frost. Wagner wasn't happy with the lyrics he wrote for the song, so he never recorded it. When he teamed up with Cooper in 75, he played the music for Alice, who attached it to a title he was looking to use, Only Women Bleed. Based on that title, he and Wagner came up with the rest of the lyrics. The song was produced by, again, this guy's name has come up before, Bob Ezrin. This guy was awesome. A powerhouse, rock pop producer powerhouse in the 70s. Using a demo that was recorded at the home of Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees.
Hey.
Look at all these connections.
He's
like, going to
be in
Monkees.
Town next weekend.
Yeah, cool. Cooper and Wagner were able to walk to Dolenz's house to record the demo. So very interesting. So I believe, and I could be wrong, but and maybe Kevin or one of you guys could look it up. The album by Joan Jett, just the hit list. I believe that she does a version of it on that album.
Oh,
could somebody clarify that?
Yeah.
Do you have another song, Mr. O'Connor?
I have one more for you.
One more song.
As a kid, I can remember hearing this song and just feeling a little funny about it. Remember a guy by the name of Randy Newman there, you know? Well, back in 1977.
I know what song you're talking about.
I have this on my list. Go ahead.
Yep. Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, do it.
We can both talk about
it. That's okay. Do it, Fish McKellen.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, Lou. He released a song called Short People. Short People.
Immediately.
Wasn't even called Little People. It was called Short People. So the state of Maryland tried to ban this single with a satirical anti-little people refrain, short people got no reason to live. It didn't stop the song, though, from becoming number two in the U.S. charts at the time. So, but I just remember hearing that as a kid going, is this okay? Is this all right?
From the album Little Criminals.
Oh, I see what he did there.
Little Criminals.
Little Criminals.
Yeah, he was good at doing those mock songs.
Yeah.
Rednecks, half a man. But then he said later on, it was just funny.
It's just a joke.
Well, yeah, I laughed.
It's just a joke. Psych.
I thought that I had looked this up. There it is. The song is widely misinterpreted, which generated a great deal of exposure for the song and controversy for Newman. On the surface, the song is making fun of little people, but short is meant as a figurative sense.
Oh.
Intending to poke fun at people who are short-tempered, small-minded, which is quite the opposite of the literal meaning. A lot of people didn't get the joke and thought Newman is a bigot. Many radio stations refused to play it. At first, Newman sings about short people as having nasty little feet, stubby little fingers, and dirty little...
Right.
That's awesome.
Like how?
Well, that wouldn't make him a bigot.
Short people are just the same as you and I. All men are brothers until the day they die.
That wouldn't make him a bigot. It would make him a little it. Wouldn't it? Right? Am I wrong?
Wow,
you're fired now.
Fired again?
Okay, Hal, when you pick out the 30 seconds for the audiogram for this is the section you want.
Right. Wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Is that maybe why they're called midgets?
And that's the end of our show.
Thanks, everybody. It was fun while it lasted.
There's a joke about that in Lord of the Rings. Do you remember? It's in the second movie.
Is it Tossing the Dwarf?
Yeah, where he says, toss me. Don't tell the elf.
Don't tell the elf.
It's a total joke about midget tossing. Yeah. Thrown into a fucking, like, family film. It's like,
oh, my gosh.
That's great. That's like the greatest moment in the whole series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I cracked up.
I see what you're doing making the... And you have to kind of be paying attention. Oh, I get it.
I get it now. Toss me.
because this song was a big hit, real quick, it didn't, because it was such a big hit, this is why the people didn't get the irony. Because mm-hmm. like it reached so many people that just don't think
right.
in metaphor or that something could be ironic. Did you know that Glenn Frey and Timothy B. Schmidt sing backup on this?
I did not know that.
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah, Newman has recorded other songs that examine mock bigotry, rednecks, and half a man.
Mm-hmm.
Released a video for the song where he is seen performing it in a recording studio. In a candid clip, he looks at the camera and says jokingly, "My motivation is to change the course of Western music," before giving the finger. Oh, go Randy Newman.
Funny guy.
Love Randy Newman.
Funny guy.
Mama Told Me Not to Come. He wrote that song. You know that?
Really?
He wrote the song Mama Told Me Not to Come. Three Dog Night had to be hit with. Yep.
Learned so much here.
Yep. Somebody said, why don't we go with Lily one more time? We're closing it. Hold on. No, we got time. Go ahead.
All right, so I'll go with Christine 16.
Yes!
Kiss!
Oh, boy.
Of course we had to have a Kiss song.
Mm-hmm. 1977. Originally appeared on their 1977 album Love Gun, released as a single in the U.S. The song peaked at number 25 on the Billboard Hot 100. Written and sung by bassist vocalist Gene Simmons, the song is about an older man who is infatuated with a 16-year-old girl named Christine. The song's subject and lyrics were controversial and made some hit radio stations reluctant to put it on their playlists, while others, including a lot of them in the hometown of New York, only played it after 7 p.m. as an album cut.
Wow.
The song's title was originated by bandmate Paul Stanley, who was planning to write a song under the same title until Simmons beat him to it. Two different time lengths are printed on the single, one at 3:13 and another at 2:52. Both versions are run at 3:10. According to interviews,
nice.
According to interviews in Guitar World, both Eddie and Alex Van Halen played on the original demos. When Kiss Kiss recorded their version of the song, Simmons said that he made freely copy Eddie's solo from the demo. There are many songs in rock about lusting after young women, but this one may be the lustiest. Like all these songs, it is in character. Gene Simmons, who handles the vocal, was 27 when it was released. But we can assume he is singing from the perspective of someone younger, although clearly older than Christine. We picture him as a 19-year-old kid who graduated high school but still hangs around town, scoping out the girls, kind of like Wooderson in the movie Dazed and Confused, which was set in 76.
All right.
That's what I love about these high school girls. I get older, they stay the same age. So that one is kind of like, at the time, probably not so much, but it would never fly today.
No, sir.
It's real quick, we can mention Benny Mardones. What's his name?
I think I said
Benny.
She's
only 16 years.
Into the Night.
Yeah. And it has the same kind of thing. Sweet Little 16 by
Mr. Chuck Berry.
Yeah, Berry. You know what I mean? And he actually had some issues. He got a little trouble.
Yes, he did. Not anymore, Clarice.
Oh, hell.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to just mention real quick. This is not the official, and this is rumor and hearsay. So I'm just, because rumor and hearsay is way more fun than mm-hmm. like the reality.
It's always more fun.
I'm looking for my notes. Where is it? Okay. Ricky, Don't Lose That Number by Steely Dan. The lyric has been interpreted as to describe a relationship in which an older gay man, possibly like one of these like Fire Island types, is trying to seduce a naive, possibly heterosexual younger man. You tell yourself you're not my kind, but you don't even know you're mine. What? And you could have a change of heart when you get home.
Mm.
Wow.
Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
Sexy.
That is sexy. Not the explanation that Donald Fagen gives of the song.
Of course not.
But it's like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That whole thing. It's about LSD.
It's about. Yeah, it's about LSD. It's about what we say.
Absolutely.
That's just how it is.
Yeah. You can go to Song Facts and look up the Donald Fagen's like official statement about the song. But this is just way more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Rumor and hearsay, how? Right? Aren't they way more fun? Love to Love You, Baby.
Oh. What was going on during that song?
First of all, rest in peace, Donna Summer.
Yes.
Like, oh my God. Whew. God.
Oh, he's getting all kinds of hot.
She's the one that got me like real. It made me really like, hey, man.
Yes.
Ooh, ooh. Young. I was young, just starting to like think about sex and stuff. Mm. And this insanely gorgeous person comes on, sings songs like "Love to Love You, Baby." This was Summer's first hit, one of the first disco hits. Wrote with the help of European producers Giorgio Moroder and Pete Belloet. Is that right? Belloet? Belloate?
Sure.
Okay. It was the first big hit who went to a great success as a songwriter and producer. Among his accomplishments was Summer's Hot Stuff on the radio and scores for many movies, including Scarface, Midnight Express, American Gigolo, many songs used in movies, among them Take My Breath Away and Call Me. This was Summer's first hit and one of the first disco hits, as I said. Disco gained popularity in gay dance clubs where they used DJs instead of bands. Eventually, the music spread to mainstream clubs and made its way onto radio stations and movies like Saturday Night Fever. Summer had many hits and became known as the Queen of Disco before Love to Love You Baby. She was more of a folk pop artist. And before that, she performed in musicals, recorded show tunes. This was a song that set her on the path to disco divadom. I love that. Disco divadom. And this is the thing I want to kind of touch on. It was rumored that Summer sang in her very convincing, orgasmic sounding vocals on the studio floor while simulating a sex act. The rumor was partly true. After trying to record her vocal the traditional way, her producer, Giorgio Moroder, had her sing on the studio floor while lying on her back with the lights out, since she didn't want the guys working on the album looking at her when she sang it. She explained that she was indeed touching herself during the vocal.
Hot.
She had her hand on her knee.
Oh.
Oh.
Her boyfriend served as her fantasy inspiration.
Oh.
Liar.
That was beautiful.
Lies.
That was beautiful.
Summer had a Christian upbringing, Pittsburgh Kevin, and was unlikely writer for such a song. She told Time magazine in 75 that to write the lyrics, I let go long enough to show you all the things I've been told since childhood to keep secret. She added in an interview with the Telegraph magazine, I took on this character and eventually it fitted me.
I bet it did.
But according to the tally and by Time magazine, Summer could be heard enjoying 22 orgasms in this number.
There's that.
The magazine declared the song sex rocks, sex rock. Donna's message is best conveyed in grunts and groans, languishing moans. Her goal is to make an album for people to take home and fantasize in their minds. Love me some Donna Summer.
Can't even
love
right
me
now.
Some Donna Summer. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm a rock and roller, but come on, man.
Donna Summer.
That woman, phew, rest and look at her.
Somebody get some ice.
Somebody stop me. Okay. All right. All right. Can Lily say something?
Say
and
something.
And then we're going to do this day in music.
All right. I have Hot Child in the City, Nick Gilder.
Oh, 78.
There you go.
Released in June 78 is a single from the album City Nights. He won 2 Juno Awards in Canada and People's Choice Awards in the U.S.
You remember the People's Choice Awards?
Wow. Sort of. Despite the song's innocent and catchy pop stylings, the tune is based on Gilder's experiences witnessing child prostitution. I've seen a lot of young girls, 15 and 16, walking down Hollywood Boulevard with their pimps. Their home environment drove them to distraction, so they ran away only to be trapped by something even worse. It hurts to see that, so I tried writing from the perspective of a lecher in a guise of an innocent pop song. Love the song, but pop song about child prostitution. Go, Nick. Mm. Yeah. Okay, then.
We'll make love.
I do love that song.
This Day in Music is brought to you by Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get a custom paint job on your musical instrument. Let's talk about Elvis Presley was at number one on This Day in 1961 on the UK singles chart with... See, he wasn't just an American artist. Worldwide.
No, worldwide.
Number one with Surrender was eighth UK number one hit. The song was based on the 1911 Italian song, Return to Sorrento.
That's fun. I like it.
Do you know who Leslie Gore is? What did Leslie Gore sing, Pittsburgh Kevin? It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. Started a 2-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with the Quincy Jones. He was a staff writer for Mercury Records. He wrote this.
Did you know Quincy Jones song? I did not know that.
That's something.
That's wild, wacky stuff, man.
Rashida Jones.
We can't do We can't do a This Day in Music without talking about the freaking Beatles.
They've had something happen every day.
The Beatles did something every day.
They were very busy.
During a 12-hour session at Abbey Road Studios on this day in 1966, the Beatles added overdubs to Yellow Submarine, mm-hmm. with John Lennon blowing bubbles in a bucket of water and shouting full speed ahead, Mr. That just sounds like fun. So I'm sure there was some like marijuana or some drinks.
There was
or
something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some Lucy in the Sky.
There was some Lucy in the Sky happening. Roadie Moll Evans played on a bass drum strapped to his chest, marching around the studio with the Beatles following behind in a conga line, singing "We All Live in a Yellow Submarine."
This, I'm gonna tell you what,
that sounds like fun.
Why don't we do that?
Okay, on this day in 1967, the Beatles again released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in the UK.
Wow.
It was recorded over a 129-day period, beginning in December of 1966. The album is widely regarded as one of the greatest of all time and was the Beatles' album where the track listings were exactly the same for the UK and the US versions.
Oh, wow.
As of 2011, it sold more than 32 million copies worldwide, making it one of the best-selling albums in history. David Bowie released a self-titled album and two singles. From the album Rubber Band and The Laughing Gnome. This day in 68, Simon and Garfunkel went to number one on the U.S. singles chart with Mrs. Robinson.
I love that song. Oh,
there you go.
Featured in the Dustin Hoffman and Bancroft film The Graduate, the song earned the duo a Grammy Award for Record of the Year in 69. When was the last time you watched The Graduate, Pittsburgh, Kevin?
It's been decades.
It holds up. Yeah. It's funny Does as it? Hell. Yeah, it's really... Comedies like that, The Odd Couple, you know, some of these, like, you gotta listen to the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like these, like, constant, like, you know, like sight gags and like
fart jokes.
Yeah, gross out humor and stuff like that. Like, you really gotta,
it's
like,
well written stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of writing in it. The Eagles released their debut studio album on this day in 1972. The album was an immediate success and produced three top 40 singles. Take It Easy, yep. Witchy Woman, and Peaceful Easy Feeling. That's depressing. Let's not talk about that.
Okay.
On this day in 1981, the first issue of the heavy metal magazine Kerrang! Was published as a special pullout by UK Weekly Music Paper. The music paper Sounds, AC/DC had the front cover plus features on Motorhead, Girls' School. Remember Girls' School?
Girls' School.
Yes.
And Saxon.
Kelly Johnson. Mm.
I loved this album. This was the follow-up to Purple Rain. On this day in 85, Prince and the Revolution started a 3-week run at number one on the U.S. album chart with Around the World in a Day. Okay. I think we have kind of... Ed Sheeran was revealed as the most played pop act in the UK on this day in 2016. Hmm. On the sale of Jerry Garcia's favorite guitar, Wolf, raised millions of dollars for civil rights groups when an auction of the custom-made guitar fetched $3.2 million U.S. dollars in this day in 1927. Okay, so we have some legendary birthdays today.
Mm.
Do you want me to name that one?
This
Pat Boone?
It's Pat Boone's birthday.
Shut up.
The guy that like did all those, took all those Little Richard songs and made them acceptable for white kids. Yeah. Happy birthday to Ron Wood.
Hey.
Yay.
Guitarist, songwriter, painter, radio presenter. Was originally a member of the UK band The Birds, not The Birds. First worked alongside Rod Stewart in the Jeff Beck Group. Mm-hmm. Then he got together with three members of the Small Faces, formed the Faces, eventually became a Stone. He became a Stone.
That whole thing.
Tom Robinson, singer, songwriter, radio presenter, longtime LGBT rights activist, born this day in 1950. Michael Landau, American musician, engineer, record producer, and session musician. Worked with Boz Scaggs, Joni Mitchell, Seal, Michael Jackson, James Taylor, Richard Marx, Perry, Bing Floyd, Roger Rogers, and
all of them.
Basically, wow. Worked with everybody. Alan Wilder from Depeche Mode was born this day. Okay. In some time. 1959.
Okay. One of those years.
I'm just trying to think of anything. Oh, here's one. Happy birthday to Alanis Morissette.
Oh. Happy birthday.
Are you thinking of me when you fuck her, Lily? Just kidding.
Yes, always.
Lily? No.
And happy birthday to Brandi Carlile. This day in 1981.
1981?
Yeah. She's a wee lad. A wee lad.
She's a wee one.
She's my age.
She's just a wee one.
You're a wee lattice, too.
All right, guys. Lily, tell them about your stuff.
My show? Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern time on Rock Rage Radio. You can get the app for free or go to rockrageradio.com. I'm going to see Winger on Monday. Whoop. That's all.
Tell Kip I say hi.
She's only 17.
She's like 34.
That should have been.
She's like 34 now.
That should have been one on the list. We could probably do a part two of this.
Oh, of course.
Or we could probably do songs of the 80s.
Yes,
I
have a couple from the 80s.
Yeah, so
there's a lot from the 80s.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
There's a lot from the 60s.
Most controversial songs of the 80s. Well, like A Virgin. Mm. That was like, oh, what? Darling Nikki.
Well, Filthy 15 is all
but,
on there.
But still, like that's still a little more than that. But all right, guys, wolfscustoms.online. Go to iTunes, give us a good rate and review, and subscribe. RockRageRadio.com. And go to LouLombardiMusic.com, and you can get an advanced copy of this. It is nowhere yet. It is not out on Spotify or iTunes or anything like that. I recorded this. This features two of my favorite musicians in the world to play with. First of all, Keith the Hawk Hawkins is on drums. And my good friend, my sister from another mister, Katie Simone, is doing some great background vocals on this. So we're gonna rock out with this on the way out. Thank you, Pittsburgh Kevin, as always.
Certainly.
Lily V6. And we'll catch you guys all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
This door I'm gonna